Hi, I'm Juan Pablo Montoya, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 847, August 24th, 2020. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. Today we have news from the brickyard to the shady grove, from the milk of Indiana to a cup of tea in England. Back to Brewmeister of podcasting, Mr. Rogers.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Taku does it again. Fernando does not win the Indy 500. LCH complaining about it's so lonely at the top. Williams now, an American team, damn it, and they're building a brand new hot dog stand. We've got more from Gary Sloan in thepitlane.com, and I just want to remind everybody one more time, we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab on the front page. You know you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm doing very good, sir. You mentioned Taku-san. Oh boy, did he serve a real hot miso soup to Scott Dixon. Did you like the race, sir?
I did like the race. I was not happy about ending on a caution with as few as three laps to go. I understand where we wanted a nice clean finish, but you got to give it to Taku. He was machismo. And the pass on Scott Dixon with 20 laps to go, and then catching up with the back markers, and that was it. He passed one. That one pass was enough to get over a second ahead of Scott. Nailed it. Taku does it again. It's pretty impressive.
And so was the defensive move he made on Scott Dixon. That was real big TFs, let me tell you that.
Yes, and there were some little girls crying about it for a moment, but it was legal, it was tactical, and it was impressive. I say, shut the F up, Donnie.
Yeah, very, very impressive race. Two big crashes. Good news is the drivers are okay, but really enjoyed, and of course, no fans, but we do understand, and it was nice to see Mr. Roger Penske giving the orders, you know, gentlemen, start your engines. But let's do it this way. We shall start the F1 Weekly podcast with some supersonic news. Good news, a Concord agreement. Formula One's, all the teams have now signed. There was some issues with Mercedes. Looks like Toto has put everything in order. So now all teams are committed to the pinnacle of the sport until the end of 2025. So this is very good news. I'm happy. We shall have peace in our lifetime. And Formula One being Formula One, I am sure one team or another will come up with something in the next few, by the 15th of September that will take a life of its own, and then there'll be more issues and this and that. But that's typical Formula One. The chief executive, Mr. Chase Carey, said Grand Prix racing and Ferrari had gone hand in hand since 1950, and we are happy that this relationship is set to continue for a long time, as it is part of the very DNA of the sport, and which basically confirms that the love bonus for Ferrari will continue for several years, but on a sliding scale. And very important for Ferrari, I don't know why they would want this, they get to retain the veto right, which to me is ridiculous. It would be like Green Bay Packers having a veto right in NFL rules and regulation just because Vince Lombardi once coached that team. But such is life, and we have all these 10 teams committed, and we shall see how it goes. Your thoughts on the Concord Agreement, Senor?
Yeah, I don't have that much thoughts about it. You know, Toto Wolff was whimpering about the Concord Agreement, and all of a sudden, after a couple of days, everybody kissed a lot of bootay, and they all signed. So whatever was bothering Toto, I think Olaf said, you know what, just relax, dude. Take a load off. And he looked at his paycheck and said, you're right. So keep up the good work. I'm glad everybody is back on the same page. We'll see what happens in 2021.
I have a feeling this new CEO of Daimler-Benz is trying to cut costs, and who can blame him? And obviously, you know, if you're paying somebody $45 million and you chop it off in half, it's still over $2 million a month. And I don't know how much they're paying Toto, but I'm sure it's very good money. So I have a feeling something might happen. Toto might take a different role, or say off Wiedersehen. Something is going to happen. Too much rumors are floating around. And as a friend of mine liked to say, he used to tell me all the time, rumors are started by management. So we'll see where it goes. Now, shall we look at the Belgian Grand Prix coming up this weekend? Spa is what Mr. Brown would call, James Brown, not Zach Brown, a man's war. Nothing in this world like Eau Rouge. History goes back to days of Antonio Ascari and Nuvolari. Jim Clark scored his first win here. Dan Gurney's made in Santa Ana, California Eagle won here. And names like Senna and Schumacher won here numerous times. So what are we going to see on Sunday? Well, as we all know by now, this is the day of the expanding man. A new record after every qualifying and every race. The only man who can stop him is his teammate, but he is losing steam in a black race suit. So the only option on top of the top step of the podium is Mr. Max Verstappen. Can we ask for some rain at Spa, Mr. Rogers? Rain at Spa bring a lot of excitement, just ask Damon Hill. Last year the race was won by Charles Leclerc from pole position while his teammate set the fastest lap. I am hoping both he and Seb at least take the fight to Bottas and Max. I will not be surprised to see a pink Mercedes driver on the podium. Are you expecting any regime change in Belgium, sir?
No, they will continue to dip French fries in mayonnaise.
I understand French fries originate from Belgium, right?
Correcto.
Now, you were at Spa the year it rained, right, if I recall correctly?
You are absolutely correct, as usual, Mr. Encyclopedia.
Did you enjoy the race in the rain? Seriously?
I did. Who doesn't enjoy the race in the rain? 1998, Schumacher. David Coulthard.
Yes, that was the day. I remember watching that on telly. Yeah. But do you expect any sort of surprises at Spa? Do you think Alexander Albon, who is under all sorts of gunfire and mortar fire, do you think he'll be closer to Max? Because, you know, if he keeps going half a second slower, then, you know, chop-chop might happen.
Well, let me put it this way. We've had a few moments now to see how things are developing this season. And no, Albon would not find a half a second unless he taps into the Fernando Alonso aura, which is not going to be in a good mood anyway, so I wouldn't do that. No, I'm afraid there are not going to be any surprises. Ferrari will be slow because they've had to wind everything down. The party mode for Mercedes will continue because, well, the FIA are scared of Toto. It's funny how the FIA used to be Ferrari's best friend. Well, that's not the case anymore. They seem to be partial to Mercedes and copies of Mercedes. And Renault is certainly trying to get a nice, clear, concise answer out of these wine-drinking buffoons based in Paris. There's a problem here. And that's why Jean Todt was hanging around with the sophisticated people over at Indianapolis. And it's frustrating, but it is what it is. But no, there aren't going to be any regime change, except for one thing. We will listen to Max and what he says on the radio, because that's going to be interesting, and hopefully there'll be rain. I'm finished now, Nasser, and I'm sending it back to you.
Thank you, sir. And the Party Moors ban was going to come into effect in Spa. Now it's been moved forward to Monza. And the thing is, you know, Mr. Rogers, this past weekend we had Indy 500. This weekend we have Spa. Next month we have two Formula One races in Italy, starting with Monza. So, you know, it's a wonderful life we have these days, despite the lockdown situation around the world. But I think party mode or no mode or whatever mode they do, this year and next year, I think it's just going to be Mercedes AMG. And I don't need to say who will be doing most of the winning. We all know that. Okay, sir. Now, gone. You said it very well. American company owns Williams now. And I understand Claire went on Amazon.com and ordered a big supply of Nathan's her dog.
Hot dog. You say you're really coming back. Hot dog. I'm waiting at the railroad track. Hot dog. You say you're coming home for good. Hot dog. I'm gonna keep on knocking wood, baby. I can hardly wait. I'm gonna meet you at the gate. Hot dog. I fell in love with you and then you away. But now you're coming home to stay, hot dog. Soon everything will be alright, hot dog. We're gonna have a ball tonight. I got a pocket full of dimes. It's gonna be just like old times, hot dog. You went away and every day was misery. But now you're coming back to me, hot dog. My heart is gonna go insane, hot dog. When you come walking off the train, know how lonely I have been. But when that Santa Fe pulls in, hot dog, baby, hot dog, hot dog.
Big news on Friday. Gene Haas's company, an investment firm from the Big Apple, has taken a big bite into the wonderful world of Formula One team ownership. Say hello to Doralton Capital. This ain't no CBGB. They invest in companies for long haul. This is good. The best part is they plan to keep the Williams name, which I really appreciate, and not change it to something like Hudson River Line or Brooklyn Boys. Nothing is forever, but it'll be a sad day when Frank Williams leaves the building for the last time as team owner. A team he started with very little money. Ex-Grand Prix driver Harden Ganley, who was one of the first employees at McLaren Racing Team, once told me that when he met Frank Williams, we're talking, I think, either very late 60s or early 70s, that it was the first time he had met somebody in racing who had less money than him, and Harden said he himself had no money. So Frank has really come a long way, and I greatly, greatly respect what he has done. And late famous, you know, motorsport journalist Alan Henry once told a story in his racing column. Frank had asked him to give him a ride from a Swedish track to his hotel. Frank was there with his Formula 2 team to race, and when Alan dropped him at the hotel, Frank asked if he could pick him up in the morning also. So Alan was kind of surprised and asked him if he was not renting a car. And Frank replied, "No, I don't have the money to rent a car, but I'm here to race a Formula 2 machine." But Frank Williams was a very determined individual to make and made it to Formula One, at one time running his team from a carpet warehouse and doing business deals from a public payphone. He also, you know, was a racing driver, which I'm sure most of our listeners already know. He arrived in Formula One with his friend Pierce Courage, and tragedy struck in the 1970 Dutch Grand Prix when his friend and driver perished in a fiery accident. When Frank met Patrick Head, who was then living on a boat, it was not smooth sailing due to ongoing financial issues, but all that changed when Frank painted one of his cars in the color scheme of Saudia, the national airline of Saudi Arabia, and took it to the fancy hotel where Arab money men were staying. Silverstone 1979, Frank Williams' Grand Prix team became race winner courtesy of Clay Regazzoni. The following year, Jonesy Boy became his first world champion. 2 years later, it was Keke Rosberg, then Nelson Piquet. The Renault partnership and active suspension provided total domination with Arne Aige in 1992 and Professor Prost in 1993. For 1994, Frank hired a driver he had first met on a flight from London to Amsterdam when the young driver was still in Formula 4, but this ended in the tragedy that was Imola. Damon Hill and Jacques Villeneuve would deliver back-to-back championships. From then, it was slow decline, with brief hopes of glory when BMW became a partner. The team's last Grand Prix win came in 2012 in Barcelona. Amazingly, Pastor Maldonado was the winning driver. For me, Frank Williams is in the same league as legendary team owners like Colin Chapman, Ken Tyrrell, and Ron Dennis. Their contribution to motor racing is absolutely fantastic, which racing fans all over the world will cherish forever. What the fate of Claire Williams is at this time, we don't know. Your thoughts on this purchase by the American team, sir?
Yeah, and they plan to keep the team where it is. So all the signs, this is not CVC Capital Partners where they will suck all the money and do nothing for the sport. So this is very good news. Apparently, one of their partners used to race, and I'm sure there is a lot more to this deal that we are aware of, but we'll see how it goes. What I'm really hoping is William stop this thing that if you have $12 million, you can have a seat here, and Claire will sing praises of you as a driver. I mean, even if you see who they have right now as reserve driver, and that has been their trend for many years now, I just hope this comes to an end. Shall we move on, sir?
Please, let's move on.
Well, Bottas singing the blues. Valtteri started the season opener both last year and this year with a bang. In 2009, with that famous "To Whom It May Concern" message. This year at Red Bull Ring, he was steaming hot like a Finnish sauna. But since then, his teammate has been giving him a Turkish bath, or hammam as they say in Istanbul. Bottas is aware of this and was recently quoted as saying, "There's not been a weekend that has gone smoothly and without issues or so on, apart from the first one, so a pretty bad season so far," end of quote. Bottas is 43 points behind Hamilton after 6 races. Anything is possible in this world. 43 was the number of points Lewis was behind Nico Rosberg in 2016, which he was able to overturn into a lead before his championship flamed out in Malaysia. Bottas is a very good Grand Prix winning driver, but he is no LCH. Thank you, Mr. Benson. Over to you, Mr. Rogers. Do you see any scenario in which Bottas is 2020 world champion?
I don't see Bottas ever being world champion.
Well, if he's not with Mercedes, then that's it.
That's it. I mean, let me put it this way. Fernando, Max, Bob Newhart would all love to have that Mercedes seat because that's the guarantee. As long as you beat your teammate, that's the guarantee. The guarantee of le champion du monde. But unfortunately, it's the teammate is the problemo.
Yes. Yes. Same problem has been faced by Rubinho and Eddie Irvine and Michael Andretti and Gerhard Berger. But such is life. Okay, sir, next on the agenda is Amazon is not so prime when it comes to Formula One. I'm sure you've read about this thing that came out that they use some algorithm data from qualifying sessions dating back to 1983, told the world who the fastest ever driver was. F1 used technology. And you know, Rob Smedley was involved in this. This technology came from Amazon Web Services, concluded that Senna was faster than 7-time world champion Schumacher
over a theoretical qualifying lap, with Hamilton, your favorite driver, in third place. Now fourth is Max, fifth is Fernando, and this includes number 8, Heikki Kovalainen, number 9, Jarno Trulli. Wow! Kovalainen and Trulli are listed ahead of Sebastian Vettel. Since the data is from the early 80s, I will not complain about names like Clark, Peterson and Villeneuve missing. Most amazing was Ross Brawn quoting a person who worked with Jarno saying, if races were 5 laps, Trulli would be the Thomas Tank Engine. And this from a guy who worked with Michael Schumacher at Ferrari. I think I need some Asti Spumanti, Mr. Rogers. Your thoughts on this, whatever you want to call this thing?
I would recommend some Francia Corta. It's called a bunch of crapo. Or should I say it in France? Une petite crotte bien formée. That's what that is. I don't listen to stuff like this. I mean, come on. Jarno Trulli? I'm sure David Coulthard saw that and started thinking about the Trulli train in Monaco. So exciting. Yeah, this is nuts. Especially, I mean, Heikki Kovalainen?
Yes, Heikki Kovalainen. Can you believe that?
I'm telling you, somebody was smoking the doobie.
Yes. Amazing. Okay, sir, now some sad news for you, Mr. Rogers. Thieves in the temple. Some people are worthless, according to Mr. Pierre Gasly. You know what happened to him. His house got robbed when he was racing in Spain. And according to him, they took expensive BRM and Tag Heuer watches, jewelry, clothing, glasses, and racing, you know, stuff. This is not very good. But, you know, when things go wrong, I look at it, try to look at it in a positive way. It's good that he was not home. Who knows if these people were armed or how many were there. And remember, similar thing happened to Jenson Button and his wife and several friends in south of France. They were partying, and when they woke up, everything was gone.
Yes, inebriated is the word I used in that specific podcast. And yes, they woke up and everything was gone.
Yeah, there was also a report that they, you know, the people who came in may have used some sort of gas to, you know, make sure nobody wakes up, but who knows. Next item on the agenda, sir, Russians are coming. Sochi may be the first Grand Prix where we will have race fans, and some in the F1 fraternity are expressing some concerns about that. Your thoughts on this, sir? Do you think they should allow fans?
I don't think they should, but they will, because Putin is in charge. Putin will be at the race, first of all. They have a vaccine, remember, the Russians? It's sort of like Sputnik. Remember Sputnik? They had to beat us with that, and now they've beat us with the vaccine. Whether it works or not, I really don't care, but they will have fans, because the Russians, they're worse than everybody. If they say they have fans, they will have fans. So hopefully they'll socially distance and wear masks, as Formula One does. And I'm sure the paddock will be locked tight. But it'll be nice to see people in the stands for sure. I'm pro fans.
Yeah, you know, talking of vaccines, with all that's going on in this world, not to get too political, but yes, they do have all kinds of vaccines in Russia.
They have an F1 Weekly vaccine in Russia.
Okay, sir. Anything else you want to talk about before we move and morph into Motorsports Mondial?
Yes, well, the globe is just to my left. It's beginning to spin, so why don't we hear from Gary Sloan?
Hello, listeners. My name's Gary Sloan, and this is this week's edition of In the Pit Lane. So the Formula One paddock eventually discovered Williams' fate last week when it was announced that the relatively small American private equity firm Darlington Capital had purchased the team for a net fee of 112 million euros. So for the Williams family, on the surface it was good news, as other potential bidders would have likely renamed the team and in all likelihood ditched Claire. Now Darlington does have experience in engineering, but no apparent background in sports, let alone motor racing. So it was a surprise when, buried in all the PR noise, Claire Williams stated Darlington were people who understand the sport. So where does this knowledge stem from? Well, involved in the deal is one James Matthews, the London-based hedge fund owner. Now Darlington purchased Williams through a subsidiary, BCE Limited, which is rumoured to be an investment vehicle for the wealthy James and his father David. Matthews was a racing driver, winning the British Formula Renault Championship way back in 1994 for Manor Motorsport. So it's unclear if James has ambitions to become involved in running the team. Maybe Claire needs to start working on her CV after all. If the deal was no doubt a vote of confidence in Williams, it was also a vote of confidence in Liberty Media's ambitions for the sport. Were Darlington influenced by one Lawrence Stroll and his assessment of owning a team? Well, upon his purchase of Force India, Stroll commented, "I looked at it as a business opportunity. The value of an asset like this treated properly, cherished over time, significantly appreciates." Stroll told the New York Times, "I've never really anticipated owning a team, wanting a team. But put simply, this was a phenomenal business opportunity that presented itself." Interestingly, Darlington has a close connection to Liberty Media and its inner workings. Darlington's chief legal officer since 2018 is one Stephanie Delitio. Before Darlington Capital, she was the general counsel for no other than Pirelli in North America and would have been involved in contract negotiations for Pirelli in both its supply deal and title sponsorship with Liberty Media. She would have been privy to Liberty Media's management teams, and when Williams appeared on the radar, would have been able to provide wise counsel to Darlington's founders, Mark Savage and Darren Flutes. So, also in the running to purchase Williams, one can safely assume was one Michael Latifi, sponsor and financial backer of the team. So has Latifi lost out, and will he walk taking his money and his son to do a deal with, say, Gene Haas? Well, part of Darlington's due diligence, discussions would have taken place between the two parties for Darlington to assess Latifi's commitment. So has a side deal been done to keep Latifi on board? Well, Latifi owns Sofinia Foods, one of Canada's leading food groups, which have the optimistic goal of becoming the most successful food group in the world. I'm not sure if executives at Nestle will be having sleepless nights just yet. To achieve this goal, Sofinia will have to continue acquiring brands to add to its existing portfolio of the nine it already owns. Step forward, Darlington, which owns the Canadian-based Island Abbey Foods, who have several honey products under the Honey Bee brand. So have Darlington agreed to sell Island Abbey Foods to Latifi in an attempt to sweeten the deal? No pun intended. Well, time will tell. On a footnote, Toto Wolff will be smiling after banking another €5.6 million from selling his remaining Williams shares. So that's it till next week. More details at inthepitlane.com. Until then, stay safe, stay well.
Once again, Gary, an outstanding job. Checks in the mail. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back after these brief messages.
Want to find out how much you know about Formula One? Are you interested in learning more about Formula One's history? Then have a listen to the Formula One Trivia Podcast, a weekly 10-question trivia quiz that will test your knowledge. Visit the website at www.f1triviapodcast.com to find out more.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the King, the Sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And we shall start with the big event on Sunday, Indy 500. Under new management of Mr. Penske, the Memorial Day Classic was run in August due to the craziness going on in the world these days. No spectators, but still the greatest spectacle in auto racing. And apparently Mr. Penske and his people have done a lot of upgrades to the facility, so I'm looking forward to checking this out in the near future. The pre-race show had a very brief mention of Nando, like he was some Billy Bob from Barcelona. As always, a great race. Mario Andretti drove a two-seater Indy car with San Michael in the back seat. So three Andrettis were first, second, and third on the pace lap. A very nice touch. Nice to do something for legend of the sport, that is Mr. Mario Andretti. As far as the race is concerned, it did not go Alonso's way, which means you may have turned off the TV. With 75 laps to go, he had clutch issues and lost a lap. According to him, I like his comment, he did not even get one lap of kindness in the race. 21st out of 33 drivers, definitely not what Dr. Strangelove ordered. Sir, your comments on the plight of Nando during the race?
Well, first of all, it was a tough race. He didn't qualify well, but that's really not too important. Simon Pagenaud did not qualify well. He won last year. So let's give Fernando a break. A lot of expected winners didn't win, but then it's always the Ganassis and the Penske's that are going to be up front. We know that, but Ray Hall is doing a fantastic job as well. And I was very impressed with the effort up front, but Fernando had some clutch issues. What he needed was a lucky dog to get that lap back, but he did get a lucky dog. And I'm not even sure if they have lucky dogs in the Indy 500, but nevertheless, once he was down a lap, it was going to be tough going all the way. But we've got to look at the glass half full. Fernando finished the race, and a lot of people made mistakes and hit the wall and didn't finish the race. People that had done the race many more times than Fernando. People who won the race previously and hit the wall and crashed and made mistakes. So I'm very proud of Fernando for finishing the race. He's got the 500 miles in his pocket. And don't forget, everybody who participates wins money. So Fernando took a check home. He's going to pay his taxes because he lives in España, because he's a good man. And in the end, it was a great race. I enjoyed every minute of it.
Yeah, me too, always. And you know what happened? They bridged. There was a bridge to the top of the grid, a sharp end of the grid, and it was called the GP2 bridge. And he had burned that bridge a couple of years ago. So that's what caused him to run so far and get lapped in the race. But, you know, after two more years, when he's done with Formula One, driving for Renault for three times, he's going to come back. But life goes on. Early in the race, we had the world, this was my favorite, we had the world premiere of not tire fire, but wheel fire on the car of Australian driver James Davison. I've never seen that before. It was really, really bizarre. Dutch rookie Rinus Wiekje was very impressive and aggressive in the early laps. Not so impressive was pole sitter Marco Andretti. He did not even lead a lap. He was passed right at the start, so that was kind of sad. Alexander Rossi had what he called a winning car. He was banished to the back after a little argy-bargy in the pit lane with, of all the people, Sato-san. Taku took the lead from Scott Dixon. Both were racing towards their second victory at Indy. A heavy crash for Spencer Piggott late in the race saw the race end under caution. As they say, you take the wins as they come. Sato drives for Bobby Rahal's team. And, of course, Bobby himself won the Indy 500, I believe, in 1985 or 86, something, 86, 85 was Sullivan. And Bobby had a big day. His son, Graham, who's a very nice kid, he was third for Team Pepito. Scott Dixon from New Zealand is managed by ex-F1 driver Stefan Johansson and led 111 of 200 laps on Sunday. Very, very impressive. This was his race to lose, and he did that. This number of laps led puts him third on the all-time lap leaders at Indy, which is an amazing achievement. Amazingly, just one victory at the Brickyard, but that is one more than mega Indy stars like Michael Andretti and Paul Tracy. PT can thank Tony George for giving him our favorite CD, the all-time classic from Isaac Hayes. Good news is both Florida drivers who crash for Oliver Askew and Piggott are okay. That's good news. And Mexican Pato Award was Rookie of the Year. He finished in 6th place. Yeah, this race, you know what happened in the last 30 laps, 40 laps. It becomes a real issue of who will stop for fuel. And you can, just like the Daytona 500, there's almost always there is some sort of a caution situation in the last 20 laps, and it's just one of those things. I think if they had red flagged the race and restarted for a mad dash for 2 or 3 laps, I think everybody would have ganged up on Sato-sa, and he can only block and hit so many times on an oval. So it worked out in his favor, but you know, he worked very hard. He was very impressive. The pass he made on Dixon was very impressive, and very aggressive in his defense also. So a ex-F1 driver is now a two-time Indy winner. And speaking of Formula One world champions who have won this race include Jim Clark in 1965 with Colin Chapman, Graham Hill in 1966 in the beautiful American Red Ball car, and Mr. Rogers, as far as my racing memories are concerned, this racing car, American Red Ball for Graham Hill, is one of my earliest recollection of looking and admiring a race car as a very young child, or maybe 6-7 years old. And that was courtesy of Firestone ad in Life magazine. Mario Andretti in 1969 in Andy Granatelli's STP special. Emerson Fittipaldi not once but twice, and becoming the first Indy winner not to drink milk, preferring orange juice from his own plantation in Brazil. Other notable performances have come from Nigel Mansell, who almost won on his debut, and Teo Fabi. In 1983, he stole the show with his Gold Bandit Mars to take pole as a rookie. And no talk of Indy 500 is complete without my favorite race, the last six laps of the 1982 Indy 500 between Gordon John Cobb from Coldwater, Michigan, and as Tom Carnegie would say, Rick Mears from Bakersfield, California. He's on it. Fantastic race, and like somebody said, you know, the race was delayed from May, but within like 9 months, we're going to have another Indy 500. Man, I'll tell you, I was looking at some pictures of the Indy cars at the museum. That place is worth a visit just for the museum. And I need to go back. I want to look at Mario Andretti's car. They have the car that, I think it was the 67 A.J. Foyt winning car where they, you know, put sealant on it. So it has a lot of dirt on it and grass and, you know, bugs on it. Very, very impressive. And of course, they have the car that won the very first Indy 500. And they have the 1965 Le Mans winning Ferrari, which American driver Mastin Gregory co-drove with Jochen Rindt to victory. So, fantastic place, fantastic event. Okay, sir, now we move on to MotoGP. And Mr. Rogers, I'll tell you the wonders of lockdown where you can't go anywhere and the wonders of web and YouTube. This weekend, man, I watched races from, you're not going to believe this. You heard of this French track called Nogaro?
Yeah.
They were having a Formula Renault Clio race. I watched that. There was a Spanish Formula 3, which goes by the name Formula Euro Open. I watched Super GT racing from Suzuka. It was MotoGP, Indy 500. That's just fantastic. Okay, so now we come to MotoGP. Man, what a finish. Not just on the final lap, but in the final corner of the Red Bull Ring. Now that Marc Marquez is out, almost everybody has a chance to win a MotoGP race, and they are delivering some great, great excitement. Jack Miller and Paul Espargaro fought for the win going into the final lap, and the two were at it going into the final corner, which allowed Miguel Oliveira to slip by and take a very unexpected and surprise and happy victory. This is first win in MotoGP for a rider from Portugal. And I had to get on Facebook and send a congratulatory message to Dr. Miguel in Portugal Estar. Earlier, the race was red flag after Maverick Vinales. Wow, you have to check this out. He bailed out from his bike at over 140 miles per hour due to brake failure. And this is back-to-back weekends. Vinales had very, very lucky escapes. Did you watch any of the MotoGP action, sir? Yes or no?
Yes, sir. Loved every minute of it. Very exciting. And now that Lewis Hamilton is out, I mean, Marquez, you mentioned that other guys now have chances to win. It's exciting.
Yeah, he is pretty much like the Lewis Hamilton of bike racing. You know, if he's there, hardly anyone wins. Oh, another event that I watched and I liked it very much was the European Karting Championship. And with that, we present the Chris Berman segment, The Nigerian Nightmare in Napoli. On Sunday, the boys and girls were in Sarno in Italy near Napoli, also known as Naples. American kid from New York of Nigerian heritage, Ugo Ugochukwu, put in a great performance and completely dominated the final race of the weekend to win the junior category. He now leads the European Championship, and the final race will be in Germany next month. Okay, finally, sir, we come to this month in motorsports history. August 17, 1975, Mark Donohue from New Jersey and the man who gave Roger Penske his first victory in the Indy 500 passed away from head injuries suffered in a pre-race warm-up session for the Austrian Grand Prix. Some years ago, I met his son, David, and did an interview with him at Laguna Seca. It was very nice connection to a driver I respected very much. I shall always remember Mark Donohue's interview on BBC Radio after his retirement from the 1975 British Grand Prix, and I vividly remember Mark saying, "I was taken out by John Watson. Like you say, oh, the memories." More sad news. August 1, 1980, Patrick Depailler, French driver from Clermont-Ferrand and winner of 1978 Monaco Grand Prix, was killed in a high-speed crash off his Alfa Romeo during testing at Hockenheim Ring. August 23, 1987, on this day, Didier Pironi and two crew members were killed in his Colibri powerboat during a race off the Isle of Wight. The accident happened when his powerboat ran into a wave created by a passing Exxon tanker. August 21, 2005, this season we may yet again have a Turkish delight, but on this date, the inaugural Turkish Grand Prix was won by Kimi Raikkonen in his McLaren. It is very sad, Hermann Tilke's best design lasted only a few years on the F1 schedule. There you have it, Mr. Rogers. Anything else we can help you with?
First of all, another outstanding job with the MM. Keep up the good work, Nasser. I do want to mention that the Roger Penske was cruising around in his golf cart with the machismo man himself, Jean Todt, being special, got to watch the Indy 500 from Indianapolis with Roger. They're buddies.
Well, Roger is buddies with anybody at the top level of the automotive world. But you know what the translation of this meeting is? A second United States Grand Prix at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And I cannot wait for it, Mr. Rogers.
I agree, especially with all the Penske upgrades at this facility, which I thought was fantastic back in from 2000 to 2007. So now we've got the Penske touch. That means bathrooms that are clean with flushing toilets. It's going to be fantastic. I'm serious. Indiana is so well organized when on race weekend that it's definitely a great place to go. And I hope that F1 comes back very, very quickly. And I certainly don't want to replace the circuit of the Americas. I just want two races in America.
Yes, sir. And Kota track, and I say this because I've been there every year except for the first one, that track, to me, is the third best F1 track right now. The only thing better than that in terms of a layout is the Spa and the Suzuka circuit. It's a fantastic venue. And steak is always good in Texas, as we all know. And I was thinking the other day, Mr. Rogers, that if we have two races in the United States, then we have basically, sitting here in Florida, four races I can go to in a season which are within 3 hours of flight. Montreal, Indianapolis, Texas, and Mexico. So things are getting, as I'm getting older, things are getting even better, and I love it.
Wow, Nasser. But you forgot to mention me.
I mean, I have to look at the sky to look at you.
Sweet. So there you go, Nas. It's going to be exciting. We got Fernando coming back in 2021. We are going to wrap up 2020 because we know LCH will get the big trophy. But in the end, it's going to be interesting with no party mode in Monza, which means that pole position could go to Max or Leclerc, if Ferrari decides to add a little olive oil to the fuel mixture, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yes. Well, or they can contact, what's his name? Daryl Waltrip's brother, Michael Waltrip. They can contact him and he can supply him some rocket fuel from Morton Thiokol. Remember when Toyota came into NASCAR, they had rocket fuel in his in the engines of one of the cars?
I thought that was a great idea. I'm all for that. See, I think cheating is good. It's healthy. It's invigorating. It causes those brain cells to expand, those synapses to pop. I'm loving every minute of it. So there you go, NAS. Keep up the good work. That's it. Any predictions for Belgium? Quickly.
Yeah, I think Max will be on the podium. And I think one of the Pink Panthers will be on the podium. We all know who's going to win. But I want to ask you a question, Mr. Rogers. You're so excited about... Apparently, this is the first time in Formula One history that a driver is going to drive for a team for the third time. There have been many two-timers. The question I have for you, very seriously, with the way things are going, you know how next year is going to be for Renault and everybody else except for Mercedes. Question I have, in the 2 years he will be at Renault, that has to be his final 2 years. Do you think he will add one more win to his tally of whatever he has? Yes or no?
No.
Yeah, so the question then becomes, why even bother? What I don't know what he's going to achieve by going into the package he's going into.
You got to stay busy, you know? Idle hands, it's a bad thing. So I don't have a problem with it. Hey, we'll see Fernando out there. We'll have fun. We'll get some good radio action. What's to complain about? I'll be happy. You'll be happy. And no, Renault's not going to have a fast car next year. I mean, how's that going to happen? Talk to Ricciardo. You know, he does P4 and FP2 and qualifies 13th. Hey, skip FP2 and qualify a little bit better. That's my tip of the week for Ricciardo and everybody else in the world. Listen, it's about participating. Listen, we know LCH is going to win until he leaves. He's the Marc Márquez. So it's all good. We'll see Fernando and Machismo is going to be back in town. Thin Lizzy's going to be playing. It's going to be great.
Yes, that will be great. Yeah, it will be good for sport.
Exactly. It's going to be good for the sport. So, and that's what we want. LCH is bad, except for, I mean, he's winning too much, but it's, you know, I'm happy for him. And I know it's lonely, but he'll be fine. So there you go, Nas. That's my tip of the day. You know what? I'm tired. It's very warm in Northern California. And the air is very smoky, as everybody knows. There's a lot of fires very close to the Palatial Studios. But don't worry. I've got everything under control. But it is warm here. There's a lot of fires. There's smoke in the air. And all of us are tired and fatigued of staying indoors. So I'm going, you know where, Nas?
Tell me.
I'm going to the hot dog stand right now.
Good for you, sir. Good for you. Well, I still, one of my big dreams, you know, one of these days, hopefully you will come to, both of us will be at the U.S. Grand Prix, either at Indy or at Austin, and we definitely need to do a hot dog sort of festival for the F1 Weekly Familia members.
Of course, I'll have a hot dog stand all set up, and if you flash your F1 Weekly membership card, your hot dog is free with a nice ice cold Old Milwaukee.
Ooh, wow. We're going real upscale here.
That's right, Nas. Pabst Blue Ribbon is out. Old Milwaukee's in.
That's good. That's good.
So there you have it, Nas. And on that note, I want to thank all the listeners who put up with this. Once again, I'll be at the hot dog stand. And I thank you and wish you all a wonderful week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.